This is George Takei, and I have feasted with fools on Feast of Fools, the world's most downloaded gay podcast. We've got your number.
It's the podcast that foolishly goes where no one dares to go, girlfriend. The Feast of Fools. Ow!
On today's show, we'll be talking with actor George Takei, who's best known for playing the role of Mr. Sulu on the original Star Trek television series and in six subsequent Star Trek films.
George drew phaser fire last year when he beamed out of his closet as an openly gay man and spoke candidly about his relationship with his life partner of 19 light years, Brad Altman. Okay, I'll stop making sci-fi metaphors now.
Please. George Takei joins us today to talk about the 40-year anniversary of Star Trek.
His personal experience as a gay man in Hollywood.
Why he came out.
And why Howard Stern was able to trick George into thinking he was arguing with California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
If you live in the Chicagoland area, be sure to come out to the Pride Parade on Sunday, June 25th, where George Takei and his partner Brad Altman will be the Grand Marshals.
The parade starts off at noon off the corner of Halsted and Belmont. We'll be there with bells on. Will you be there?
Stay tuned.
Hello.
Oh, hi, George Takei. This is Fausto Furnos.
And Mark Fillion.
How are you?
Hi, welcome to the Feast of Fools podcast.
The Feast of Fools.
Mm-hmm. How are you doing today?
I'm amongst fools, am I?
Well, you're dinner tonight, honey.
Oh, I'm being feasted off.
Yes, you are.
You're the main course. Actually, the title of our show is sort of based on an essay by a gay activist, Harry Hay.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which he sort of had the concept of a gay liberation as a freely expressing yourself. And now you're freely expressing yourself, aren't you?
I am indeed.
I want to sort of begin our conversation today with you about your coming out process. I know you've been spending a lot of time traveling around the country talking about being a gay actor, being a Japanese American, and your experiences and all of these things with the human rights campaign.
Right.
What was your motivation for coming out when you did and how you did?
Well, my partner, Brad Altman, and I have been together for the last 19 years, practically two decades. And so we've been out in that sense with our family and friends and certainly with my Star Trek colleagues. But the only thing I had not done was to talk to the press. Because that's a whole different ballgame altogether, a Pandora's box.
Was the press, like, hounding you, or, like, when you did talk, or at conferences?
Let me tell you what prompted it. Last year, the California legislature did an historic thing. They passed the same-sex marriage bill. I thought, you know, California and Massachusetts were going to be the bookends for the United States. But even Massachusetts legislature did not pass a same-sex marriage bill. It was through the judicial process.
Mm.
And all that was required was the autograph of another actor who also happens to be the governor of the state of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger. And when he ran for office a few years back, he made all these moderate statements that you know, he's from the motion picture industry, he's worked with gays and lesbians, he's comfortable with gays and lesbians, and some of his best friends are, you know, the whole mm-hmm. cliche bit.
Well, some of the best friends may be, but it's certainly not you.
That's for sure. And I thought surely he was going to sign that bill. As a matter of fact, he was on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and Jay asked him right on, right, you know, directly. If the California legislature passes that bill, would you sign it? And he said he would. And so, you know, I thought, well, it's a done deal. But when he played to the narrowest and most reactionary segment of his conservative base and vetoed it, I felt that I needed to speak out and that my voice needed to be authentic. And so I spoke to the press for the first time last year. And as I thought, it was a Pandora's box. And out of that box came Fausto and Mark.
Yeah, we talked
We did.
You gave us a lot of content for our show for at least a good month or so.
Did I?
Yes, you did.
How have I been your content?
Well, because I think we talk a lot about gay celebrities and people coming out. And I was telling, it's like, we got to support our brothers and sisters who are
Absolutely.
Out there in the front lines and putting their things. And I really
well,
want to
very much for that.
Give you give you a high five and a big hug and a kiss to you for being
I'll
putting
take the
yourself
hug and the kiss.
But not the high five. All right.
I've seen the pictures of you two guys, and you're both quite cute.
Well, thank you. Did you see our pictures of us in our Star Trek uniforms?
What? What'd you say?
I said, did you see the pictures of us in our Star Trek uniforms?
No, I have not. I'd love to.
Well, if we can find them, we'll send them to you. They're a bit racy, though.
Oh, in what way?
We were running a holodeck program, and it's one of those holodeck programs they never showed on the television show.
Yes.
But it was sort of a adult entertainment.
I would love to see that, and I am over 21.
Oh, that's right. Well, we'll get your email and we'll forward it to you through your publicist.
Oh, good.
Now, it wasn't a big surprise for you coming out then. I mean, for a lot of your friends
so
and family.
Many of my friends said, "Oh, really? I'm shocked. I had no idea." You know, I mean,
they said, "Oh my!"
Oh,
back
my.
To you.
You know, people say last year was my coming out, but that is really inaccurate because we've been out. As a matter of fact, you know, Brad and I support many nonprofits here, and our names are literally carved together in granite on donor walls and on theater seats, and certainly on a lot of dinner programs.
Do you find that that's very common in Hollywood, where you know a gay couple or a person is just known to be gay, but it's just not talked about or reported in the press, or they don't necessarily need to come out? That there's enough
information,
you know, there's
public
enough,
information
yeah.
out there.
Well, you know, this is my personal philosophy, and I think it's subscribed to by many of us, you know, these are very private decisions, personal decisions, and it's not for me to, in quotes, out someone. You know, they've got to make their decisions based on the realities surrounding their life. And so I will never out another person.
Well, don't you think it's a bit strange, though, that you have to, like, hold a press conference to tell people you're gay? I mean, it's like, if it's such a personal thing, why don't you just, like, you know, send a card or something?
Well, actually, it was to comment on the veto, and so as a part of that, you know, I spoke to the press about my being gay.
And what has been the political reaction to you and other gay celebrities speaking out against Governor Schwarzenegger?
Well, it has been overwhelmingly positive. As a matter of fact, you may or may not have known that I had a debate with Arnold Schwarzenegger on the Howard Stern show.
Well, it wasn't the real Howard. I mean, it wasn't the real...
He was a very, very good imitator. I mean, he was very credible. And the way he did that soft shoe dance, trying to change the subject, you know, was totally in character with Arnold. And I guess I wanted to believe that was Arnold. And so I engaged him in conversation. And when he tried to change the subject, I said to him, you know, "Mr. Governor, you have been elected to a serious office, and your decisions and your actions make a profound impact on many Californians' lives. And so I would expect you to respond seriously to my serious comments." And so finally, he started addressing the subject. And then finally, after much give and take, he said, "Well, George, you make sense, and the next time the California state legislature passes a same-sex marriage bill, I will sign it. I was...
Oh, that is so mean.
I turned around and said to Howard, you know, Howard, you are not only the king of media, but you have tremendous political muscle. You on your show today, right now, you heard the governor of California agree to sign a bill based on our discussion here on your show. And then that's when he told me that he was an imitator.
Oh, so you didn't know?
I was crushed.
How disappointing. Oh, did you go cry? I mean, it was like...
No, I'm not about to cry and wilt. I said, all right, okay, you had your fun, Howard. Now, I challenge you. Because you do have that kind of political clout.
He does.
Mm.
I challenge you to get the real Arnold Schwarzenegger to call in. And so you know what? 2 days later, the Arnold Schwarzenegger called in.
The real guy.
No. Very same.
Oh, they just...
I got bamboozled again.
Oh, you poor man.
Poor George. Well, George, what is Arnold Schwarzenegger... What is his future in California?
I mean, is it over?
What?
Is it over?
What's his future in California? I mean, it's...
It's very bad. It's very bad. Last year, he had a few... I think about four... ballot measures that he initiated and he campaigned hard for, and they all lost. Teachers' union's against him, the firefighters are against him, the police union is against him, and in politics, if you have those groups against you, it bodes very... And certainly, the GLBT community is absolutely adamantly against him because of that veto.
Now, when you were the best known, obviously, for your role as Mr. Sulu in the Star Trek series,
yes.
And we want to sort of like ask you: are you going to sort of do it, Ellen DeGeneres, if in any future Star Trek movies, like have you know the character of Sulu come out as gay because he never had a girlfriend?
Oh, well, as a matter of fact, Sulu is straight, and he's had...
How do you know that, though?
He's had a daughter.
Honey, you don't have to be straight to have kids.
He could be like Ellen DeGeneres. You could like come out, have the character come out, and then all those people who write all that slash fiction would be their dreams would come true.
Easily gullible creatures, you. The actor is one thing, and
right.
The character is another. And just because the actor is gay doesn't mean the character he plays.
Right.
Is gay.
But you know, you got to reach out to the writers. Got to reach out.
You saw Brokeback Mountain, didn't you?
Absolutely.
Weren't those actors so deeply believable and anguished?
I heard they did a lot of method acting for that role.
I'm sure they did.
You know,
lots of
wonderful
poppers.
Actors, but they're both straight.
As
now,
far as we know.
Saw, those Doris Day Rock Hudson movies, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Weren't they delightful? Weren't they charming? Weren't they scintillating?
Scintillating,
and
I don't know.
And he was completely believable as that macho leading man.
Oh, I never bought
but
it.
But in fact, he was gay.
Mm-hmm.
So there you are. I want you guys to understand there's a difference between...
Well, I know there's a difference.
The actor plays and the actor himself.
I agree with you, George,
absolutely.
But what I'm saying is that can't the writers... sort of, just like Ellen DeGeneres played a character that was sort of based on who she was.
Right.
But not really, very
right.
loosely,
and
right?
And it was kind of, she was straight, but then she came out.
She came out, and then they said, well, let's take advantage and use the reality. You know, just like Star Trek is allegorical for things that happen on modern-day Earth.
Well, did you see
right?
that Will and Grace episode that
I did.
The character was named George Takei, and the character was gay, but that was not me.
Exactly.
I was acting a character written by the writing staff of Will and Grace.
Well, do you think that the Paramount Pictures, with the new project that they're working on, perhaps might work in, you know, a gay character? Maybe not you necessarily, but...
Well,
you know?
As a matter of fact, I am doing Sulu again. This is amazing. You've heard
I know
of
this
webcasting
is the character that will not
the
die.
The webcast, yes.
I'm in September. I'm beginning work on another episode of Star Trek called "The World Enough and Time," and it's going to be finished, and it will be webcast early in the year 2007. So I'm going to be playing on your computers and laptops. I mean, this is something we never dreamt of, you know, 40 years back when Star Trek first came on. Mm-hmm. Even you know, as futuristic as it was, we never thought that there'd be this kind of medium to engage people. And so I will literally be acting on your laps.
Our own little lap dance. Lap act. Yeah, it's
I'd love to lap on you. I mean, I'd love to act on your lap.
We'd love to have Star Trek: The New Voyages. This is what it is, isn't it?
New Voyages, that's right.
New Voyages. And that those are, because I was looking at the website just a little while ago, too, and this is a fan-based production?
That's right. Isn't that incredible?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, Star Trek is celebrating its 40th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Now, and thank you very much. Uh-huh. Yes, I can say I'm 40.
And you were just a teenager pleasure. When the show started.
Well, you're very kind. But I forgot the point that I was going to make.
It's 40 years. 40 years.
And yeah, the
anniversary.
The anniversary and the fact that you're doing the sort of the internet-based program by the fans.
Oh, that's right. No, I was going to say, you know, Gene Roddenberry created Star Trek, but this 40-year phenomenon, this incredible popularity and longevity of Star Trek is because of the fans. It was the fans' first of all, you know, we were canceled after the second season on TV, and it was the fans' letter-writing effort that revived us for a third season. Mm. And then when we went into syndication after we were canceled, the fan support and the skyrocketing ratings made, our return as a cartoon series, mm-hmm. and then as a series of motion pictures, now 10 of them. And so it's the fans that really created this longevity for Star Trek. And now, unbelievably, it's the fans now that have taken over the production. And they got permission from Paramount to do these Star Trek episodes. And it's amazing. They have a set that is an almost perfect replica of the... in fact, it's better than what we had on...
really?
At the Destiny Studios 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the technical expertise is from people that, you know, that worked on Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation, and now they're working on Battlestar Galactica, contributing their talents because they love what they're doing. And...
Is Paramount Pictures like giving this the green light? I mean, well, are they involved?
Are they paying for it? They gave a release, but
they gave a release, and okay. The fans are the ones that are financing this.
Well, it's so great that you're like participating in this and not saying, you know, I want to separate myself from this project or this character.
I'm proud of my association with Star Trek. You know, it had important commentaries to make, and it was a positive, optimistic, forward-looking show.
Was there ever a time in your life that you had some hesitation about participating in any of these projects? I mean, because you actually tried to run for mayor of Los Angeles
in
the 70s.
City council.
For city council.
Right.
And
some of my colleagues have complained about, you know, their association with Star Trek and how it's limited their careers. It has not been true for me. I mean, I've had, you know, I've worked in the theater, on stage, on movies. I've done theater in Britain. I've done movies in the Philippines and in Australia. And in Romania, of all places. So I've had a diverse career, mm-hmm. and I haven't been limited by Star Trek. And beyond that, I'm very proud of my association with Star Trek. So, and if anything, I think Star Trek's enhanced. You know, maybe it's because I'm an Asian American, and there's that much less competition, but...
Well, it's not like you were hesitant like Nichelle Nichols was and had to have Martin Luther King call you up on the phone and say, hey, you really got to take this role.
Yeah. You know, like, why would they cast me in a play in England, whether it's in London or Edinburgh or Reading or Brighton, where I've done plays? Mm. There are fine British Asian actors in London, but they know that George Takei will sell tickets.
Right, and you're probably one of the most recognizable Asian American actors
In the world.
You know, in the world.
You I mean, know, next well, to thanks, Michelle Yeoh.
Thanks
Yeoh, or,
to Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, I owe Star Trek a great deal. And, yeah, Jimmy Doohan and Walter Koenig have both complained about Star Trek stereotyping them, you know, as science fiction types. Mm-hmm. But that's not been true for me at all.
Now, how did you land the role in Star Trek?
Well, I went to an interview. I was told it was a sci-fi pilot, and that was all right, and it was to meet a man named Gene Roddenberry. But the really operative word for me was that it was a pilot film, because if it sold, it would have meant regular employment, steady work. And so that was, you know, and then I went to the interview, and Gene described to me the role and the kind of show that it was, the context of the show, and I desperately wanted to be cast because of that very shining vision of the future. And the role was, you know, I mean, I wasn't a villain, I wasn't a servant, I was a full-fledged part of the leadership team pulling his weight on the bridge of the Enterprise. And so I really desperately wanted to be cast. And as a compliment, I must say, to Gene Roddenberry, he had good taste. He had intelligence.
He did, though. He certainly did. He seems like he was quite a remarkable human being.
He was.
So he really believed what he was talking about too. I mean, he sort of had that sort of utopic philosophy in the way he ran the set and cast the actors and relayed his relationship to all of you guys, right?
That's right. And how he related to the act, well, to people. I mean, he was very down to earth. A lot of Hollywood producers, they're all full of themselves, you know, mm-hmm. rather pompous and put themselves on another elite level, you know. But Gene was as brilliant as he was, as strong a producer as he was also very down to earth. He was I feel privileged to say that he was a friend as well as my producer.
Mm. Well, so what did you say when he came up to you and said, you know, George, I want you to take your shirt off and do a little fencing in this next episode? You go crazy, by the way.
Actually, it wasn't Gene that asked me to take my shirt off. It was the director of that episode, Mark Daniels, a sweet old man, actually.
Did he have a crush on you?
No, he was very businesslike. If it were a younger director, I would have had speculations. But no, Mark was a wonderful director and a very sweet and gentle older man. Okay. And he was inspecting me like he was inspecting a product.
Oh, really?
Well, I had a hunch he was going to ask me that. So that morning in my dressing room, I was doing a lot of push-ups and sit-ups. And people must have wondered why my... in those days, it wasn't trailers. It was these little wooden... we call them dog huts. Mm-hmm. And mine was rocking back and forth.
So oh. The dog huts are knocking.
Going on there.
Don't come.
So, it was actually me just doing push-ups and sit-ups.
Now, I heard that you actually, like, crammed some fencing lessons. They actually wanted you to do some sort of, like, you know, samurai warrior thing, and then you were like, no, I'm going to make this classy. Or
you did your homework.
Oh, I did.
You certainly exhibit that. Mm. Yes, as a matter of fact, the writer of that episode was John Black, and he happened to be on the set about a month before we actually were to work on that episode. And he told me that, you know, he was thinking of putting a samurai sword in my hand, and I terrorized the ship with it. And I told him, well, that's ethnically consistent because I'm of Japanese ancestry, well, but...
Yeah, I don't understand why they didn't just zap you. I mean, it's like you have a sword. The phaser is mightier than the sword.
Of course it is, but that was a hobby of Sulu's. Mm. You know, he went in for ancient historic weaponry, and, you know, he collected old guns and old knives and things like that, and certainly... swords and foils would have been part of his collection. So that was how that was explained.
George, when did you realize that Star Trek was going to become more than just a television program, that it had this intensity that it did? When did that realization come to you?
Well, it was in the early 70s. I got a phone call from this woman in New York, and she said they're having a Star Trek convention. Now, a few months before that, a woman in Los Angeles had called me and said, you know, they're having a gathering at the downtown L.A. Hilton. And I told her, you know, well, you know the show is canceled, don't you? And she said, yes, we do, but we are fond of the show, and we wanted to invite you to come down and have coffee and cookies with us at the hotel and share some of your experiences. And I said, sure thing, of course. I thought, you know, these sweet people. And I drove down to the Hilton downtown, and it was about a collection of about not quite two dozen people. You know, very small, intimate gathering. And so I spent a pleasant few hours there talking about Star Trek and how fun it was working with my colleagues and enjoying a cup of coffee and cookies. Well, that was in Los Angeles. And then, you know, here's this woman calling from New York saying they're having a convention and that they would pay my way on my expenses and put me up in a hotel and all that. I thought, these people are lunatics. I mean, you know, what is she talking? A convention? I'm sure it's just a couple of dozen people, you know, and they want to pay for my air flight and hotel and all. I thought, you know, this is crazy. So I demurred. And then I insisted, no, I'm not going to do it. Then she called back the next night saying, we really mean it, and we have the funds to do this. Please, will you please, join us? And I thought, well, you know, if these lunatics want to do it, I'm not going to stop them. Mm-hmm. And so I accepted, and they actually did send a plane tickets over. And so I flew all day, and then I arrived at night, and I promptly went to bed because they had an early schedule for me. I got up the following morning. There was a member of the committee there to greet me, and we went down. And she said, we're going to go down the freight elevator. I thought, these people are really kooky.
So they were, like, very mysterious with you.
Yeah.
It was like a secret society.
Yeah, I really was getting a little concerned. You know, these people, are they all there? You know? And she walked me through this smelly hotel kitchen, and mm-hmm. then we went through another set of doors into the wings of the auditorium, and I heard a roar out there. And I said, well, what is that sound? And she said, that's the crowd. I said, what? And then I heard the MC introducing me, and I walked out on stage, and here is a huge ballroom, cram full of people. I mean, some people just, you know, dangling over the balconies. I thought it was an illegal gathering, but it was a huge, massive gathering of Star Trek fans, and the ovation that greeted me when I stepped out on stage, you know, was thunderous. And that's when I first knew something was happening with Star Trek.
Were you the first cast member from Star Trek to attend a convention?
I think so. Well, the first one was in downtown L.A., mm-hmm. you know,
right.
a small group of people. And then at the that convention in New York, Gene Roddenberry and Major Barrett were there as mm-hmm. well.
No, so you're sort of like, is it weird to sort of see people, Sulu impersonators? I mean, you're like one of the few male celebrities of any kind that has his own separate impersonators like Cher does, you know? And as a gay
Garrett
man...
Wong does me too at Star Trek conventions.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is he really?
And he's pretty believable.
Well, what is your reaction? Do you, I mean, you go, it's like, you're getting this wrong, or it's like, you know, do you give them tips or anything? Or?
Well, no, because they mean well, and they're not quite me, but I tell them I'm flattered.
Now, George, I want to ask you, because you're familiar with the slash fiction out there that pairs up like science fiction or fantasy characters up with another man. And for some reason, they're very big with straight women.
Yeah.
And lesbians love to see like these gay fantasy characters get it on with. Are you familiar with the genre?
I am.
And who do you ever like read stories about yourself? Or does somebody say, you've got to look at this?
Your character.
You know, this was what, like in the late 70s. There was this buzz that there was a very well-done drawing of me. And
was it accurate? Was it accurate?
Well, I saw it, and it was realistic enough for me to be flattered. And also exaggerated enough for me to feel very good about it.
And who were you partnered with?
No, I was standing alone.
Oil.
But with the
but
slash,
I could offense with another instrument too.
But who do they usually hook you up with in that slash fiction? Are you having sex with Captain Kirk, or is it Spock,
it's, or one of those Andorians?
Chekhov.
It's usually Chekhov. I could picture that. Yeah.
So what did Walter say about that?
Read things into the glances that we gave to each other.
So when Walter heard about these stories, what did he turn to you and say, you know, let's just be friends?
Well, Walter is a very good friend. He's probably the best friend Jimmy Doohan used to be what I called my my drinking buddy. Mm-hmm. But he moved up to Washington State some years back. And as you know, he passed last mm-hmm. year.
That's a shame.
Did they send him into space as well?
Not yet. Yes, that is the plan.
Okay, are you going to eventually?
Not right now.
I don't give things like that a thought because let me tell you, my grandmother lived to 105.
Wow.
And I think I have her genes in me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be around for a long, long time.
Wow, so we can expect many more Star Trek films, and certainly... Now, here's another thing I kind of wanted to talk about, is the scene in Hollywood in 1960s and 70s for you personally. Was there an underground gay scene, or was it... I mean, were you part of that, or what was your gay experience as a young man in Hollywood, for people knowing about your sexuality, or...
It wasn't a Hollywood scene. It was a gay scene.
Uh-huh.
Gay bars. But you got to remember. I mean, well, you wouldn't remember. You're very.
It's not
young.
Like you and Tab Hunter were hanging out together.
No.
As much as you would like to.
I was enamored of him, but I never met him. Nor Rock Hudson. I thought he was hunk.
They both were.
They still are.
Well, not Rock.
Tab Hunter is a incredibly attractive man, but I mean
he is. He certainly is. But there was this. You got to remember, in the '60s, it was a whole different world from the ones one that you know.
Mm.
It was very suppressed. It was there were gay bars. But, they were frequently raided, so there was always that fear, you know, of...
Even after Stonewall?
This is before.
Oh, before, okay. Mm.
Before Stonewall. But there was a gay community, and the relationships were rather furtive, I must say, and very... secret.
Mm-hmm.
It was a whole different. Last year, Time magazine came out with a whole issue titled "Gay Teenagers," and they had about four or five articles on the subject. And the gist of the comments being made were of those articles were that with teenagers today, it's no big thing.
But, well, do you feel cheated in a way? I mean, it's like that you didn't have that?
Not cheated. This is part of, the realities of my life. I went through that. I lived through that period. You know, I dated girls despite the fact that Jimmy was more exciting to me,
Yeah. Well, you always talk about this Jimmy in all your interviews. Is this a real person?
Well, there have been Jimmys and Bobbies and Richards
No, but you always say, I've been listening and reading a lot about you, and you always and you always use Jimmy as an example.
Was Jimmy your first love?
It was I would say first love, but a distant and unrequited.
Oh, it's not awful.
Yeah, he was a cutie.
Now,
this was in grammar school too.
Oh, so it's not like he knows you're talking about him.
No.
Now, what is it that our young generation is may not understand? You know, young gay people today about what you personally have experienced living in a time where people for safety reasons and for career reasons had to remain closeted.
Yeah, you guys live in a very blessed world. Of course, we have a long way to go yet. But
amen.
We've come a long way. If you knew what it was like back then, you know, and then, I'm talking about when I was in grammar school and junior high school, and it was in junior high school that I had my first sexual experience. And then, I'm building my career. My first trip was to New York was in 60, and I lived there for a couple of years. And, you know, it was... You want to build a career, you know, but you know that if people know, then forget about it. You're not going to have a career as an actor, you know. So everything is kept secret and hidden. And the other part of me was that my father guided me to be active in the political arena because, as you may know, I grew up in... two U.S. internment camps during the Second World War. And despite that horrific experience that we went through, my father believed that our system required that good people be in the process, actively engaged in the process. And so even before I could vote, my father was a big supporter of Adlai Stevenson for president. And he took me to the Stevenson headquarters and volunteered me. But, you know, it was great fun, and I enjoyed the whole experience, and I became involved in the political arena, and I supported a lot of other candidates and issues, and I've been active in the political arena. But there again, you know, if you were, quote, exposed as gay, then forget that, too. So here I was in two arenas, building an acting career, which is a very public activity, and being active in the political arena, which is also a very public activity. And, in quotes, exposure in either one of them would mean an end to either areas. So, you know, there was that that fear of exposure, everything being hidden and done surreptitiously. You know, you go to the baths, but you register anonymous. I mean, not anonymous.
But people knew who you were, though. I mean, they'd see George Takei there and be like, hey, it's Sulu.
Yeah, you know.
In a sling.
I was in Indiana, and, you know, I was there. This was another hat that I wore was I served for 11 years on the... board of directors of the Southern California Rapid Transit District. And I was in Indiana for a transit conference, and you know, I had the evening free, so I went to the baths, and here was this gorgeous, tight muscled blonde kid, you know.
Ooh.
They're corn fed in Indiana.
What?
They're corn
fed.
They're
very big.
It's like corn fed, yes. And you know, it's all that farm work that they do. And I spotted him. I kind of followed him, and you know, went down that dark corridor. And
you're turning me on, George.
I know.
But please go on.
Oh my!
Well, I touched his shoulder. He turned around and he looked at me, and I saw his eyes light up, and he whispered, Sulu.
Ooh.
And immediately all the excitement that I had in my body, you know, just drained down. I was recognized. My anonymity was blown, and I said, no, and I just hurried back to my little cubicle.
Oh,
that's was a, such down, but that's the kind of climate, you know,
right.
that was.
So do you have any advice for Clay Aiken today? I mean,
it's a whole different world.
I mean, is he being foolish by sort of being so coy, or is he smart, or what is your take on him?
Well, I'm not going to comment on it because okay. it's his career, it's his life.
Well, your laughter commented plenty.
What?
Your laughter commented plenty.
We'll send you a quarter turns t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just seems to me like everybody is irresponsible of their own careers and where they're going, but it's like, you know, you having sort of walked in, if he is gay, if he is hiding something, I mean, what would you say to someone like Clay Aiken if he were gay?
You are a real journalist, aren't you? All these hypotheticals that they... President Kennedy used to call them iffy questions.
Well, what's your iffy answer?
My iffy answer is, if he were, and if I were of the commenting kind.
Yeah.
Yes. No. Yes. It's okay. It's okay. Okay. Well, we'll ask you something that's not so controversial. Whose idea was it to shave Shatner's chest on Star Trek?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Then they must have asked him to shave his head as well, because Picard was not the first bald captain.
Oh, yeah, I had heard that. Huh?
Does it piss you off? I just saw a documentary about the impact of Star Trek on technology.
Yes.
And William Shatner is going on television, and he's saying, you're George Takei. Does that piss you off?
No one in the world, including my mother, has called me Georgie except Bill Shatner.
So and, of course, you call him Bill, not William. Well, is there a certain rivalry there, he's just kidding around, or?
Oh, no.
Or is he just, like, you know, slow?
You know, Leonard says to Kay, Walter says to Kay, Jimmy Doohan says to Kay, Nichelle Nichols says to Kay, DeForest Kelly said to Kay. He has been the most isolated one of...
The captains are always that, those starship captains. It's the ready room.
Well, have you seen Boston Legal?
It was hard to watch, but
Denny
did watch
Crane.
An episode.
You know the character of Denny Crane?
I'm not sure.
He's very full of himself.
Oh, is that the character that William Shatner plays?
Bill Shatner is not acting in
Boston Legal. That's just him.
He was acting in Star Trek. Well, beyond that.
Well, so I mean, it seems like everybody on has a good sense of humor about themselves.
Yes, we do. You gotta have.
You have to. You know, there's a certain silliness to mm-hmm. to the science fiction genre. And you guys are heroes. I mean, in a very real sense. If it wasn't for the success,
well, let me turn the question around.
Sure.
To you. Why are we heroes? We're just fallible human beings.
Because you're people who took a risk to their personal safety. I mean, not safety, but to their personal careers as actors, and took a chance on something that could have been a flop. I mean, think about all the other Star Trek, science fiction programming films that have come out there that have ruined actors. I mean,
you guys put us on a false pedestal because, you know, acting is a high-risk business.
Mm. Sure.
I mean, you can be the most talented guy, the best-looking guy, you know, the most, you know, all the tools that you need to be a leading man or a fine actor. But without that thing called luck, you know, you're not going to be working.
Because it is luck, isn't it?
That's right. So it's, you know, it takes more stupidity than dedication to be an actor. And the science fiction project, you know, was steady work. And how many actors in this town have steady work? So, you know, it was... nothing heroic on our part.
Mm.
So I appreciate your putting us on that pedestal, but it was just dumb luck. You know, I went to school with another guy that I considered probably the best actor, the most creative, most sensitive actor in our class.
Mm-hmm.
He also was a Robert Redford type, blonde, you know, blue-eyed, great build, you know, a very commercial type. Today, he's selling insurance in the San Fernando Valley.
Wow.
Because, you know, when they had when he get a call for a role, there'd be 10 dozen good-looking blonde guys.
Right.
And so it becomes a matter of eeny, meeny, miny, moe. And, you know, when you have that many choices, you usually don't wind up moe. And so the next time you go up, you are again with all these other good-looking blonde guys, and you're a little nervous, and so you stutter or you forget you miss your cue or whatever, and so you lose that part again. And so the next time you go up, you know, you think you know the casting director is stupid; they can't see your talent. And so you go there with a little attitude. And who wants to work with an actor with attitude? You know? And well, he was really a wonderful actor and a very good-looking guy. And yet, you know, he couldn't make it because he didn't have that thing called the ability to bounce back.
The K factor.
you wonderful fool.
Now, you and Brad Altman are going to be here in Chicago. Congratulations, being the Grand Marshals of the Gay Pride Parade.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Well, I hope you take it.
Chicago, and, you know, being an architecture buff, I mean, that is the citadel of adventurous progressive architecture as well as great historic architecture.
Absolutely. There's some great stuff in town.
Are you guys both natives of Chicago?
I'm from Puerto Rico, actually.
Puerto Rico?
Yes.
Entonces usted puede hablar.
Sí, soy bilingüe. Hablo muchos idiomas, George. ¿Sabes?
Soy mexicano de Los Ángeles y de L.A. Oye, pero a mí me gusta la lengua mucho.
¿Y nunca has hablado español en algunos programas teatricales o películas o programas de televisión?
Sí.
Sí.
Quiero
hacer ¿quieres?
Papel.
Ah, pues yo te desarrollo uno, ¿okay?
Sí.
Now, we're going to wrap this up here with a little breakdown.
Oh, Mark, we were very rude to him.
Mark understands Spanish.
I understand Spanish.
Oh, you do?
Oh, sí, yeah. Sí.
Does Brad understand Spanish?
His father was a Spanish teacher. Tried to get him to... I bought him a Spanish language, the Berlitz tape.
Uh-huh.
But he has no stick-to-itiveness.
Just to let you know, too, a lot of our listeners are bilingual as
66%
well.
66% of our
audience.
Where were you born?
I was born in Michigan, but I was raised in Pennsylvania.
I see. And how'd you learn your Spanish?
High school, and, you know, if you want to get with some Spanish men, you learn. And I spent some time in Peru and Mexico.
Español de la cama, ¿eh?
Yeah.
Uy. Sí, parece sí, sí. Que George ha viajado mucho.
It's really fun because you can joke a lot in Spanish, and especially with Spanish, because Spanish people are very fun, so you can say lots of fun things to them.
And you've had plenty of those experiences.
I've had lots and lots of them, George.
Good for you.
And they won't end anytime soon.
Good.
Ooh, we're gonna have to stalk you when you come here to Chicago, George.
What?
We're gonna have to stalk you when you get into town.
We'll have to get to the parade on time this year. So we see.
It's usually been off.
No, it starts at noon, which means you have to wake up early on a Saturday.
And to get there, although it's not really that far, but
is it a Saturday or a Sunday?
It's a Sunday.
Sorry, it's a Sunday. Whoops. Yes.
It's Sunday. Yeah.
I wouldn't want you. But those damn fools, they got me here early.
It's going to be Sunday, June 25th, and the parade begins at noon, but we recommend our listeners to get there at 11 a.m. If they want to see George and Brad.
And get your space.
Brad will be there, too.
You guys are going to make out and stuff on the car?
On the car?
Yeah, because they usually have you sit, or are you going to be standing, walking around?
How did he do it?
They usually put you on a car, and then you wave at people like the Queen of England or something.
Oh, I'm good at doing that.
You know what you could do is, like, do the Spock hand.
What?
Do the Spock hand.
The shocker.
Shocker, right? But then,
the Vulcan greeting.
Then stick your tongue in the middle of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but when you put the two middle fingers together, that's a Vulcan no-no.
Oh, it is?
No-no. Oh, yeah.
It's like flipping the bird.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm doing it. You know, everybody's doing this at home right now.
It kind of hurts.
So here we go. We're going to do a little breakdown. Is the questions everybody wants to know. know about you, and just answer them really short, one word or two, you know, very quick.
You don't have to think about it too much.
Don't think about it too much. This is like George Takei's subconscious.
Okay.
Okay, so first question really is, what's your favorite color?
Red.
Age in relation to Larry King.
My age in relation to Larry King?
Older or
describe
younger.
Describe your age to Larry King.
I don't know how old Larry King
is. Neither do we.
Nobody knows.
I would probably be a little older.
Oh.
I would have guessed younger.
I would say younger.
I deliberately was.
What's the best feature you like about your body? What do you like most about your body?
Probably my pecs.
Ooh.
What turns you on?
What turns me on?
Mm-hmm.
Nipples.
What's your favorite type of sushi?
Salmon.
What's playing on your iPod right now?
Nothing.
Okay.
What is the best thing that happened to you last year?
The interview.
No, last year.
Last year. This is when I did the
interview. The famous one.
The front.
The coming out.
The Frontiers magazine coming out.
Worst thing that happened to you this year so far?
Worst thing?
Besides this interview.
Oh, I'm enjoying this. Delightful.
I know.
The worst thing, there have been very few worst things to happen to me. The fight I had with Brad.
No.
What's your favorite movie besides any of the Star Trek movies?
My favorite movie, Brokeback Mountain.
Oh.
Favorite snack?
Favorite snack? Sushi.
What's your? Did you ever have a pet when you were a kid? And what was the name? And what kind?
Yes, it was. He was called Skippy.
Was it a dog or a cat?
It's a dog.
What instruments do you play?
Piano.
If your vagina could write its own monologue, what would it say?
Say that again.
If your vagina would write
my vagina.
Yeah. If your vagina, your metaphorical vagina, could write its own monologue, what would it say?
I really don't understand the question.
Well, you know, the
vagina monologues.
You know, because it's
vagina monologue.
Yeah, if your vagina had to write its monologue, what would it say?
One word?
Whatever.
Well, or a phrase.
How do I answer that with one word?
You don't have to do it in one word.
That sounds like it.
You can say a sentence. We can say whatever. You can make a soliloquy. I don't.
I know that virtue to be in you, Brutus. Well, honor is the subject of my story.
Delightful. Bruce Valanche just said, feed me. I was hoping you'd say, oh my.
Oh, well. I thought I'd raise the...
You did.
I think that's a much better answer.
I like it.
Do you recognize that?
It's unique. It's Julius Caesar, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Shakespeare,
good,
right?
For you.
Wow, so
I know. I'm like...
Food.
And handsome,
What
too.
Kind of drink do you like to fix your guests?
I usually serve them wine.
Mm.
And what is what annoys you the most about popular culture today?
People who come to the theater in jeans and t-shirt. I mean, I'm a theater person.
Mm.
And... all right, you don't have to come in suit and tie, but at least come looking reasonably upscale.
Yep.
I mean, I go to the theater, and some of these people come in, you know, t-shirts and jeans.
Okay, it's a short answer.
And they've been doing that for 30 years.
Well, that's my favorite piece.
Who is your favorite plus-size celebrity?
Your fat celebrity. Who do you like?
Plus-size celebrity. What's the name of that actor? He was in Chicago. Riley O'Reilly?
Well, he's going to get mad you called him fat. I know who you're talking about, though.
Riley.
Okay. I think George or Jim was something Riley. Yeah, he's a Chicago actor, too. He's been
not
around
fat.
He's not fat?
No, I'm just kidding.
He's a little fat.
He's a little plus. Well,
want someone really fat.
No, it doesn't matter.
I don't know anybody. Anna Nicole Smith.
Now that she's rich. That's okay. Riley,
William Shatner.
Well, you said favorite, right?
Oh.
that was a qualifying adjective, okay. Right?
That's true. Now, what do you waste your money on? What is their biggest waste of money for you?
Well, I don't consider it a waste, but I spend a lot of money on theater.
Oh, okay. Good for you.
All right. Yes. In fact, we're planning on going to theater in Chicago, too.
Excellent.
Yeah, what are you going to go see?
What?
What are you going to go see?
Well, I don't know what's playing, but I will check it out on the internet. But you have the Goodman Theater there.
Absolutely. Steppenwolf.
And that the Water Tower. And the David Schwimmer.
The Looking Glass Theater, yeah.
Looking Glass mm-hmm. Theater. I saw a wonderful production who's that writer? A Chicago writer, working class.
The playwright or the author?
A playwright.
Okay.
And Schwimmer directed that production.
Yeah, he's around town every now and then.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's in New York. I guess he just closed. He was doing the Kane Mutiny court martial.
I don't know.
He just closed.
Okay.
It got bad reviews.
Well, sorry. So, George, what gets you high?
What gets me high is life, I guess.
Okay.
I mean,
cool.
I love, you know, getting up in the morning and seeing the sky. And used to go for a serious run every morning, but now it's a combination of walk-run.
Now, if you could be this is a Barbara Walters question. If you were a twee, what kind of twee would you be?
What kind of twee would I be? I'd love to be a little trinket that you fondle in your pocket.
Ooh.
a little tree in my pocket?
Hmm.
A tree.
But it's Barbara Walters. What kind of tree would you be?
Tiny. Sweet. Oh, I didn't.
Like a Japanese elm or something like that.
Oh. I
heard sycamore tree.
T-W-E-E.
T-R-E-E.
Small. Uh-huh. A tree.
Mm-hmm.
We call it trees here.
But no, when you talk like Barbara Walters, you have to say
twee.
Oh, that's why you said it that way.
Yes. If you could be a twee, what kind of twee would you be?
Oh, you guys are incorrigible.
We try.
If I were a twee, what would I be? I think I'd be a palm twee.
All right.
Oh, that's lovely.
Now, George, do you believe in God or life after death?
Well, I'm Buddhist. And there is, in the Buddhist philosophy, a continuum of life.
Mm.
I'm part of that pizza fresca that I had last night. and that pizza fresca is having another life in me.
Oh, wonderful.
And when I die and the roots sip up my particles, I become a part of that twee. And if a bird comes and nibbles a leaf off that twee, I become a part of that bird. And if a wolf comes and eats that bird, I become a part of that wolf, and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, any plans to re-release your autobiography to the stars, including the very eventful last couple of years? Or
I am now in the process of writing another autobiography because. Have you read my first autobiography, To the Stars?
Actually, I have a copy of it on my bedstand, on my nightstand.
But
of
you've
my...
not read it yet?
No, I just hold it in when I go to sleep.
Oh, well, no wonder I feel
warm.
My cockles. there are gaps in that.
I would imagine.
As I told you, you know, there was that very secretive... side of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And this autobiography now will share those parts of my life. And the To the Star ended in 1991, and I've certainly lived
it's 15 years ago.
More of material.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be incorporated.
Mm-hmm. Well, excellent. That sounds great.
And
well,
so my hope is that after, and this book that I'm working on now is called, you know, the first one was called To the Stars, and this one is called Down to Earth.
Oh, that sounds good. And when do you think that'll be released?
It depends on when I finish it, but I'm busily at work on it. And my hope is that someday down the road, Simon & Schuster will want to put it in a slipcase together.
I'm sure there's quite a few people who will want to get a copy of that when it's done.
But I hope they'll read it, too.
Oh, they'll read it.
Also.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's like sometimes I got to look at the pictures first for a long time.
Well, it's been out since 1994, so you've been studying the pictures for a long time.
Well, I want to just tell you that we want to thank you so much for coming
thank
on our
you,
show
George.
Today to live long and
I'd
prosper
love to come
and.
On.
And on and on.
Anytime you want to come on, George. If you have anything that's coming up and you want to tell us about it, please feel free.
You can even stalk us too.
We got your number.
You have because I didn't hide my caller ID. Is this your home number that we called?
What?
Is this your home phone number we just called?
No, that's Brad's number.
Okay.
Oh, Brad Altman though?
Yes.
Oh, this is your husband's number then.
That's right.
So we can stalk
your number.
My manager. And boy, does he manage me.
Oh.
I bet.
I was wondering. I was like, there was a similarity in the names, but I didn't want to assume anything. But, well, to please
there
give a big...
There two people named Brad Altman.
That's
there
true.
There must be.
Well, there could be.
I've got one of them.
Do you need another?
Well, it depends on... Is that other one younger?
There's always someone younger,
prettier,
and
faster,
prettier
stronger
behind you on the stairs going down.
A beast of fools.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Fool filling it can be.
Hey, can you do can you give us a sort of a signature? This is George Takei telling you that you are listening to the Feast of Fools, or something like that.
This is George Takei, and I have just feasted with fools on Feast of Fools. No, I stuttered on that.
Can you say the world's most downloaded gay podcast?
All right. This is George Takei, and I have feasted with fools on Feast of Fools, the world's most downloaded gay podcast.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
You,
we love
Absolutely.
You so much. We are just you're just a lovely person. You know,
aren't I though?
You are.
Definitely one of you know. It's like
you are so sensitive and so observant and so perceptive.
You're so smart. Well, we're gonna see you at the gay pride parade. So when you see some freaks coming over, and we're like, George,
what
do you look like?
Okay, so you recognize Fausto does have blue hair.
I'll
so
I really do look like I look in my pictures.
Oh, do send your holodeck pictures.
Well,
all right, but
I'll send them to Brad.
You
and
you can't repost them though.
Do not share these publicly, please.
I pledge to you.
And it was kind of on a lark. Actually, the person that took the photo is actually going to be in the studio tonight.
Oh,
he is.
And like in an hour, he's going to be coming over to do his first show with us. So
well, you
so
have my Starfleet honor.
Well, all right.
Thank you, George.
Thanks, George.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
George Takei lives in Los Angeles, California, with his partner, Brad Altman, who is also his manager.
Yeah.
He's going to be here in Chicago on Sunday, June 25th,
for the Gay and Lesbian Pride Parade. Yeah, here in Lakeview. So if you're going to come, I guess we'll be there too. So look for us. You know.
And also, he's planning on probably re-releasing his biography, but it's available now for purchase on our website, feastoffools.net. Mm-hmm. It's called To the Stars,
right.
And it's a very good book. I haven't read it, but...
And if you want to stalk him, he'll be like going to theater so like the night of before. So if you just want to just run around to all the little different theaters and see if George is hanging out, you know.
they're going on an equality trek all around this country, fighting for gay and lesbian freedom, but also for freedom for everyone. I mean, George Takei has been involved in politics, not just because he came out. I mean, he was doing this a long time, as you know, from listening to an interview. And Star Trek is celebrating their 40th anniversary.
I know. I can't believe it's been 40 years.
And so they're going to be doing all sorts of events all around the country, as well as in Los Angeles. So if you want to know more about the Star Trek conventions in your area, mm-hmm. visit our website, feastoffools.net, for the link to that.
Right, because there is going to be one in Chicago, too, isn't there?
Yeah, we're going to be there covering it, whether they like it or not.
Yep, we're going to be there. Well, you know, there's a lot of gay fans of Star Trek.
What is that? What was the thing we never asked?
Because remember that one time we wore those costumes to the gay pride?
But I think the gay fans of Star Trek are just more vocal.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, because there's a lot of straight guys. You know, and God bless you, geeks everywhere. God bless you. I do the show for you people. Mm-hmm. I was like, one thing I was that I wanted to comment on is that so many people are sort of like ashamed about liking Star Trek or
something.
They
are. They're embarrassed. They're closet Trekkies.
Why?
I don't, because
that is wrong.
They're afraid of being seen as geeks.
No, I think it is because nobody is closeted about other types of sci-fi programs. You know,
really?
they're like, I'm a Star Wars fan, big deal, you know. But right. if you're a Star Trek fan, that means you believe in equality, that believes that you live in, you hope that humanity will put away their differences and work together to fight Klingons in the future.
You know, but the Klingons are our friends in the future.
In the future, but there's a philosophy there. There's yes. there's a way of looking at the world as not as an adversarial way of looking. And I think that people sometimes in American culture, we're a little bit shy about that.
Well, we're very cowboy, rugged individual kind of idea.
And Star Trek, in a lot of ways, broke that mold. And hats off to you. And I think that's why I see people, the actors that participated in the original series, as a heroes to me. Mm. Because they personify the philosophy that Gene Roddenberry and also a lot of philosopher astronomers like Carl Sagan mm-hmm. and certainly Arthur Clarke espoused. And hats off to you people, because you've codified mm-hmm. beauty and humanity.
Oh, such wonderful sentiments, Fausto.
Well, you won't think this is too beautiful. We're going to leave you here with a song by a kid, Chris.
The Sulu dance.
It's the Sulu dance. And this is definitely a candidate for Dr. Demento's radio show.
It's probably been on.
I'm sure it's been on, and this was given to us by the Sulu man himself, George Takei. So we love you, George.
Thank you, George.
And thanks so much for being a guest on our show.
And we'll see you at the Pride Parade. You won't miss us.
If you want to comment on this show and any of our shows, visit our website, feastoffools.net.
I want to remind people that we are on MySpace, so if you're on MySpace, please join us on our space at myspace.com. Feast of Fools.
And this is Fausto and
Mark Fillion,
reminding you that you only have one life to live. So boldly go where no man has gone before, if you know what I mean.
You know what we're talking about.
Bye.
Hello.
And shake your little behind.
Yes.
You gotta give it a chance when you do the solo dance, and your friends will say,
oh my.
I'll say, jump around if you want to, and move your arms like a machine.
Yes.
If you do the solo dance while wearing tight pants, some people may call you a
queen.
The solo dance.
Solo. Solo. Just fine. Solo. Solo. Now that's ridiculous.
Sulu dance is fun to do,
well,
but your girl may get jealous.
No.
Cause if you abuse it, your girl will lose it and run up and say,
who is this?
Ah, you can dance like Sulu,
you know,
but some may choose to not.
No.
You gotta give it a chance when you do the Sulu dance, and your girl will give up the
balloon nod.
I say, Sulu dance.
Yes.
Sulu dance.
Yes.
What you say when you answer the phone?
Hello.
Sulu dance.
Yes.
Sulu dance.
Yes.
I wanna dance, we're having a ball.
Thank you very much.
Sulu dance.
Yes.
Sulu dance.
Yes.
Everybody will sing and laugh. Sulu dance.
Yes.
Sulu dance.
Yes.
Shake that big bulge in your pants.
No.
Pants.
Thank you.
It's a Sulu dance.
You know.
It's a Sulu.